Is the mic on? Episode 83. What's wrong with Orny Adams? That's me, Orny Adams. I have my good friend Jim Clemente back. We're going to continue our conversation. But first, this... I feel like we spend most of our lives sort of preparing for what may never happen. So I'll give you a great example. We floss hoping we live long enough that we're going to need good gums. But you may die at any age and you're like, why did I wait? Like, I don't want to be on my deathbed going, why did I waste all that time flossing? Like, it's like a 401k for your teeth.
Orny.
Am I right? Is this even recording? Are we starting this episode?
Orny,
I mean,
you floss so you don't have like stinky stuff building up.
Okay, that's another. Don't ruin the joke with facts, Jim Clemente. Okay. My Lord. No, everything. How many insurances? And I know you have to do some homeowner stuff. There's homeowners. There's car. There's dental. There's health. There's eye care. Some people get insurance for, you know, if they're, what is that called? If you,
there's funeral insurance.
Oh, yeah, we talk about that on stage.
There's also, you know, insurance for your puppy, you know?
But here's the thing. My business manager talked me into getting something called umbrella insurance.
Right.
So
in case you do something bad.
No, like if I get into an accident.
Yeah.
Like let's say I get into a fight with that biker and he knows I'm Orny Adams. He thinks he can sue me because I'm famous. What happens is
he doesn't just want to touch you because you're famous. He wants to sue you because you're famous.
Yeah, they want, the people will come after you. Like let's say somebody's working at your house and they fall, they will sue you for more thinking that you have more means, more money because you have a higher profile.
Right.
So he said, just get this umbrella insurance policy for a few million dollars a year. It's not that expensive.
You should definitely edit out the few million dollars because that's what they'll sue you for.
Okay. I was jacking it up for my ego. It's really
$1,000. It's really 15 cents, right?
Let me get into the story, Jim.
Sorry, I'm just trying to help you.
I have to edit out this entire thing. The way the podcast works is I open up and I do it like a bit.
Okay.
You sit there and you shut up and look pretty.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. We're just coming off of episode 82. That's why we're all jazzed up.
Yes.
So I call my insurance company to get this umbrella policy.
Mm-hmm.
And what they tell me, so I said, how much is it a year? And they said, well, it depends on how much of a, not threat, but liability we think you are. In other words, how famous are you that you're likely to be sued?
Right.
Okay. I'm happy to report I'm the lowest tier of famous. It doesn't get lower than me. I said, are you sure I'm not like, I go, how much is tier two? Maybe I'm tier two. I never wanted to pay more in my life. Yeah, for my ego. Absolutely. What's wrong with Orny Adams? Here we go. Episode 83. I got Jim Clemente here again. Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler, producer on Criminal Minds. He's got a podcast that just reached over 100 million downloads, audio downloads called
Real Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile. You're the real deal. You've done a lot. You interrogated the 9/11 terrorists down at Gitmo. You've been to Cuba. I hope you brought back some cigars for me. And how about some blinds? I need some new blinds.
What are you doing?
A hot tub cover.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get people
these blinds. How did you ruin your blind?
Because after a few years, they just stopped. Like everything else, they just stopped working. Nothing
closed.
Everything nowadays, Jim, is absolutely disposable. Everything.
Yeah.
All of our electronics, everything in our house, our friendships, everything. Relationships, everything is temporary.
You know what I did this morning?
What'd you do?
I made my bed before I came here.
That's right.
Because you played that admiral guy.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. You finish one task, you get to finish another one.
But also, you have the satisfaction of knowing you've completed one task right out of that
game. That's what I'm saying. When I'm organized, I do that. But when so many things are going on, sometimes I just get out of bed and I'm rolling right into activities.
Yeah.
So I don't make my bed. But I realize it is better to be organized.
Absolutely.
When you have a lot of things to do.
Absolutely.
Usually, actually, one thing I've discovered about myself,
right,
I'm much more efficient and effective when I have more things to do. If I only have one thing to do all day, I'll procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have 100 things to do that day, I could do 200. It's amazing.
No, that's the way it is for everybody. And that's why the other thing is when you work out of your home, like I do, you have to get up every day. You're supposed to shower, shave, and put on an outfit. Nowadays, nobody ever dresses. Everybody dresses like they're leaving the gym.
I know.
They've got their yoga pants on. Yeah, nobody's
I never
going to the
owned
gym.
Yoga pants before, but now I do because of COVID. So I agree, but I don't want to go back to offices. This is one thing I have to totally adamantly say. It does work if you're a writer, unless of course you're on writer strike. But it does work when you're a writer because traveling to work and traveling back from work and sitting in an office with other people doing office things is a distraction.
Okay, Jim, I'll edit this out. When I say go back to the office, I'm talking to the other people.
Oh, the other
not
people.
Us. Oh, no, okay. No, no, no. We're better than those people. Average non-Hollywood people go to work.
Really?
Every day? Every day. I don't want to have, be stuck in traffic at 11 a.m. You should all be in the office. If I want to sneak out.
Wait till 11 to go out.
And go shopping.
Because other people have to be at work at 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
In the last episode, we covered a lot. We got into mass depression, which I think is certainly a problem. And we're also talking.
They heard that.
Yeah. We need to finish a discussion about catfishers. Because are all catfishers sociopaths?
No. Absolutely not. I mean, there's a spectrum of behavior. And I think the people who are on the malignant side, who are actually trying to hurt people are definitely in that sociopathic range. But there's other people who literally feel so bad about themselves. They're clawing and scratching and trying to find ways to give themselves some feeling of power.
Mm.
And it's not as malevolent and it's not as sociopathic. They're choosing a very bad way to do it. And, you know, some people, I think, more on that sociopathic side think it's fun. They literally get a kick out of it, and it's horrible how much.
Don't they feel like I'm hurting somebody?
They don't care. They just don't give a damn, and that's why they're in that sociopathic range.
Because I'm so afraid of misleading people. Like, why am I the opposite?
Because you're a good guy. That's why I said you're a good guy. You actually care. I mean, I know you don't want people to know that you have empathy, but you're actually a nice guy.
I don't mind having empathy. I think empathy is healthy.
It is.
But here's the other thing.
Except for people on the buddy bench. I mean, why do you hate the buddy bench?
I think that's a whole nother discussion.
I know, but I was bullied too.
But here's, do you want to talk about that,
Jim?
Yeah, sure. Because
I got made, you know, my sixth grade teacher
uh-huh.
put my desk right up next to hers, facing the rest of the class, and made me the assistant teacher. Apparently, I had the best grades in the class. I didn't know.
Well, I would hate you too.
Hard. Of course you
would. Yeah, dork.
But I didn't know. I didn't feel like I was smart. I had trouble reading. I had dyslexia and all that. But I worked 10 times as hard so I could fit in. Yeah. But anyway, that day, as I'm leaving class, thinking I'm going to go home and tell my mommy and daddy that I just got made the assistant teacher. Boom. I get jumped by six guys from the class, beat the hell out of me, kicking me on the ground. I'm bleeding. My pants are torn at the knees. My white shirt is all scuffed and scratched up and everything. And I get on the bus. This one guy, Michael Feehan, jumped up and hit the window and said, "If you tell anybody, we'll kill you." And I had to think the whole way home what excuse I was going to tell my mother for why my uniform is destroyed. Anyway, that stuck with me. Here I am many, many years later, and I still think about it.
This is a Catholic school?
Yeah, it's a Catholic school. So what I did was, you know how they say revenge is a meal best served cold?
Is it cold?
Well, yes. After time.
Oh.
Okay, so finally, you know, several years ago, I was writing an episode, and we realized
Criminal Minds.
And when we're in casting, we already closed casting and production. One of the producers on the network said, "Look, we want to draw this story out a little bit more. Can we have one more, you know, twist before the ending?" And, you know, we try to make it as concise as possible when we send it to them. And they wanted a little more. So we said, "Great, we'll just add this character and he'll be like the boyfriend of this bad person. And he'll be like, you know, like basically trafficking kids." And they said, "Okay, we've already spent all our casting budget and, you know, we don't really have a lot of time. How are we going to do this? And I said, well, I'll play the guy. And they said, you'll play the guy. And I said, yeah, I'll play the guy. I'm in every one of my episodes as some little secret.
Is that true?
Yeah. Every some little secret, you know, literally one time it's just my hand that goes in on screen. But anyway, so
like
I played this guy.
Than me.
I played this guy and I got to name him.
Uh-huh.
What do you think I named him?
That guy.
Michael Fian, right?
Yeah.
So we had, miraculously, we had a reunion from my grade school, right? And it was when all of us were turning 60, right? So we all got together. Well, a whole bunch of us got together. And guess who was there? Michael Fian. So when we took a group picture, I put my phone on a picture of me playing Michael Fian as this, you know, unsub. And I'm holding it right in front of him. So he doesn't even know that what I'm doing is getting him back right there. But it turns out...
I hope you have an umbrella policy if he sues you.
I do.
For defamation.
But I do. But I will say this. He turned out to be kind of a nice guy. He certainly did.
See, you can develop empathy.
He didn't. He didn't remember the incident. And he was just being a kid, but he was being a bully. And it scared me. And it, you know, I was such a nice
guy.
How old
were you?
I was, what was in sixth grade? I was, what are you in sixth grade?
11.
11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what,
yeah, when I started high school at 13.
So you asked me about bullying.
Yeah.
And my position is, now that kind of bullying, I don't like physical bullying, but like being picked on, I feel like has made me stronger. So this is something I've discussed with you.
Yeah.
I'm exploring in my act, which is I've got this joke about the buddy bench, which is irreverent. And it's one of those jokes where like you see people laughing and you know, if they were at home, they might not laugh as much, but in the club, they laugh. That's a whole nother discussion.
Right.
Why people laugh in comedy clubs. But if they watch the clip at home, they're outraged, you know?
Yeah, well.
But so I'm trying to find the fair balance. And this again is because I have empathy as I've gotten older.
Yeah.
Between.
Okay. So but I want to answer that. I want to answer that first question you asked or that situation you asked. I think it's just like when you go to a movie, it's suspension of disbelief. In a movie, if you want to enjoy a movie, you have to suspend your disbelief. Okay. So that you can engage in the movie. Things are going to happen on that screen that won't necessarily happen in real life. Mm-hmm. But unless you want to just pick apart, and you probably do this, pick apart every little moment of every little movie, then you're never going to enjoy the movie, the film for what it is.
Okay.
I think people go to comedy clubs to laugh. They go to have fun.
But they are picking apart, and that's the problem.
But I think they suspend their disbelief to a certain extent. They suspend their judgment. It's suspension of judgment.
But you are supposed to suspend disbelief. So when I do in my last special, More Than Loud, when I do that bit about water bottles, okay, I know that it's about the degrading plastic bottle expiring, not the water itself, but you have to suspend that. If you look at the comments under my video, it's like a TED Talk.
Well,
there's people that like...
because they went home and
saw it. Know-it-alls.
Yeah, but that's
Mr.
what I'm saying. They're
home.
I'm saying when they're in the club, they suspend judgment, and that's why they'll laugh in the club. But when they're home in their secure environment, that's when they're going to be judging.
I'm looking into the camera, and I'm telling people, don't let facts get in the way of a great joke. Don't.
I agree. Okay,
go
for it.
Relax. It's okay. So here's a question I have for you, former FBI profiler, FAUB. FBI FAUB. Phobie. What is it? I've got my own.
FBI BAU.
Yeah, Behavioral
Analysis
Auditing Unit.
Analysis Unit.
Well, they need to change that.
Okay, well, come
That's
on.
The thing. If I was an FBI, I'd go, we're changing something.
What are you getting to?
I'm getting to is how.
Oh,
how do.
They're coming again. The helicopters,
again.
Yeah. I wonder why aren't they using the silent ones? Usually they're the ones.
How do they rationalize? They can't have these mics. They don't even can't even hear it, I'm sure. And maybe you can hear that. It's about to land on my Shasta. You know, people think I live in this. How do criminals? Okay, let's take Sopranos. I know it's fictionalized, but how does a guy like that have Catholic beliefs and yet kill? How do they separate or rationalize those two lives?
Well, they do. They rationalize, they minimize, and they project. Okay, so rationalization is just coming up with a legitimate reason in your own brain that this is necessary, has to be done, because it's the way. Yeah, they have a religion, but but they also have La Familia, right? The mafia, right? That's what they have. That's the most important thing to them. So it ranks above their religion. It ranks above their family to a certain extent. But, you know, it's not good. I'm never going to say that this is a good thing or way to live. In fact, I couldn't watch that series because I thought it was too accepting of the horrible things that he did. But they make a reason up in their head that makes them feel better. They minimize how bad what they're doing is. Well, that guy needed to be killed because he violated the rules, or he tried to rip me off, or he wasn't honest with me. And they project the blame. They say, well, it's his fault. If he hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have had to kill him.
Wow.
So by the combination of those three things helps them get through it.
Say the three again.
Rationalization, minimization, and projection. Wow. So RMPs.
But doesn't the Bible override all of that? Thou shall not kill.
Not in their minds, because they're saying that they have a higher allegiance, and that is to
the family. Do they fear the afterlife?
You really think so?
Are they sociopathic?
Certainly, many of them are.
Did you interrogate any mobsters?
I would say psychopathic.
So what's the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath?
This is a question that gets asked all the time.
Don't make me feel like I'm unoriginal, Jim Clemente.
But it's never asked in exactly the same way as you just asked.
That's right.
Okay.
A little bit special.
Yeah, you are. In fact, I would even go far enough to say that you're more than a little bit special.
Yeah.
So sociopath is a diagnosis in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychological Association. So you have to actually do a clinical evaluation of somebody and say that they meet these standards that are in the DSM. Then you can call them a sociopath. The same person, you can do an indirect personality assessment, which is what we do as profilers.
Okay.
And say they meet these external characteristics, these 20 characteristics that you judge them on in the psychopathy checklist, revised PCLR. That's the list of 20 things. And you either get a zero, you have none of it, you have a little bit of it, you get a one, you have a lot of it, you get a two, like pathological lying and no empathy and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are in the list. And if you get above a 30, you're a psychopath.
Okay, take the math out of it. What's a behavior that a sociopath will have that a psychopath wouldn't have?
This is what I'm trying to say. They could be the same person, but you can only tell that somebody's a psychopath if you judge them against the psychopathy checklist. You can only tell somebody is a sociopath if they're clinically diagnosed by a clinician. So I can't diagnose somebody as a sociopath.
Okay.
But I could say they meet the characteristics of a psychopath.
I can. Read this book, The Sociopath Next Door. I read this book. I was accusing everybody. Yeah.
Really? Is it the sociopath or the psychopath next
door? Sociopath next door. Okay. So what's worse? Would you rather be a sociopath?
Well, would I rather be a sociopath or a psychopath? They share a lot of the same characteristics. A sociopath can be, nonviolent, and so can a psychopath. They can hurt you in psychological ways.
Or financial ways.
Yeah, financial ways.
Bernie Madoff.
Right. So, you can be both at the same time.
Why can't
some
we just
aren't.
Go back to the general umbrella that I grew up with, which was nuts. That person's nuts. They're nuts.
Because nuts almost sounds like you're giving them an excuse. I mean, some people embrace the dark side. Like I said, a lot of psychopaths realize how bad it is and they enjoy it. They just jump in with both feet. They live their life trying to take advantage of other people. And then there's really bad psychopaths, like sadistic ones that get off. They literally get off. They are sexually aroused by causing and witnessing the pain of others.
And is that, we'll bring it right back to the catfishers. Are they sexually aroused by
some.
The sexual conversation that they're having or causing pain to other people?
Well, it's a spectrum. Some are aroused by causing pain and some aroused by having these sexual conversations. You know, you can't put humans in a neat little box. You know, there's a lot of variation.
Well, that's no fun. When did this word spectrum come about? Because
one of my mentor, Ken Lanning, was the one that kind of infused that into the conversation, and we've seen it apply to everything. I mean, and it applies to life. You know, you can't expect people to be machines and only act a certain way. I mean, people can change over time, and they can go back and forth on that spectrum over time. So people are complicated, and that's why profiling is a little difficult and why they haven't figured out an AI to do it yet, because there's nuances that you really have to think about and observe.
Pick up on.
Yeah, and you let your subconscious do that when you're good at it. You educate your subconscious, and you let it go to work, and then it gives you the answers.
And I sent you that article yesterday about that military drone that turned and killed its operator.
Yeah,
which is crazy because
it didn't actually happen, right? You know that it was a demonstration, and in the demonstration, the AI said, "Well, you're trying to get me to stop, so I'm going to kill you."
Right.
But it didn't actually happen to a human
being.
Okay. I mean, thankfully.
Right.
But you're going to...
So what happened was, I'll sum it up because I think I figured it out. It's called the paperclip syndrome, right? Where the drone will do whatever it takes to get them. If you tell them, get the most paperclips, they'll do whatever it takes to get the most paperclips.
Because they have no empathy for humans.
Right. They're machines. So they said, hey, here's your target drone. Kill this person at any cost. And when the operator kept saying... don't kill that person. Don't kill that person. The drone said, well, now I have to kill the operator so I can go kill that person.
Right. They don't know that, you know, why wouldn't the AI think, well, let me just go get some, you know, sedative and put the person to sleep. They don't know any variations between, you know, putting somebody to sleep and killing somebody. You know, you have to think. See, the problem with AI is we have to think of all the contingencies in order to write protections for them. And we can't think of all of them because we're human. So there's always going to be a loophole that the machine will find that we will never think about. And that's dangerous.
Here's another topic that you texted
me. Wait a minute. Before we get to that, I want to talk to you about the phone emergency signal. You know, the thing goes, wah, wah, you know
the
that.
Amber Alert.
Let me just tell you, okay? Now, you were talking about it earlier and you kind of said you were going to use it. And later in the episode, here I am, I'm driving down a highway, there's all these trucks and tankers and all this stuff, I'm in the middle of this mess, and I'm driving, and I'm trying to, you know, focus on the road, and I'm listening to you, and all of a sudden, I thought, oh my God, I thought it was coming from outside, I didn't know it was coming from you, and I was like,
Really? It's like Pink Floyd song, remember Pink Floyd used to put sound effects in there? Yeah,
I got amped up, but that's what you did to me. So
good.
Now your listeners know what I felt like when I was driving my car and heard this in my ears. Because I had my...
This is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to give all my listeners a unique experience that ties them together.
I almost crashed into a friggin' dump truck.
You're bonded. See, this is what I'm doing is I'm starting to build the What's Wrong with Ronnie Adams cult.
You almost killed me.
Okay. All right, but exaggerating. This is Munchausen by Munchausen. Which we discussed in the last episode.
Cult. People believe you. You're trying to start a cult. You don't tell people you're trying to start a cult. People will run away.
When I was in Milwaukee, I had these things that I put on the table that said, join the email list. I'm starting a cult. And the owner of the club came up and said, patrons actually believe you're trying to start a cult.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't believe that people would believe shit that I say, but they do.
But listen, you just, Milwaukee, right? So you travel a lot. Have you ever had this experience? Where you're in the hotel, you wake up in the middle of the night, and it's just foreign surroundings. You have no idea where you are for a second.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
Yeah, all the time. I've had it during this podcast with you.
On the road, when I was driving and listening to you, I realized that the day before I had that experience, and I had an exploding head syndrome situation.
Wow.
And I agree with you. It should never be called an exploding head syndrome.
Right, because even to the point where you said, I want to discuss exploding head syndrome, I'm like, what is that? They're like, you did a whole podcast about it.
I know.
Like,
I did? Yeah, because you didn't remember because it's such a stupid name. It should be phantom noise syndrome. That's what it should be called. But because it should be explaining it, not so exacerbating it. Anyway, so I realized as I was listening to your exploding head syndrome thing, which is about...
What gets more clicks, Jim? Exploding head syndrome does.
Probably.
Yeah.
But I realized that these women that called in and gave you videos or whatever, or audio things, mm-hmm. saying that when they're about to fall asleep, they hear an exploding sound or gunshots or something like that. It's a misfire of their auditory system, and it just shocks them. And then some of them found out because somebody was right next to them, not asleep, and they didn't hear anything, that it's actually coming from them. Well, the other night, I was in a hotel, and I had a mixture of those two things. I was just falling asleep, and then all of a sudden, I heard, boom! And I look up, and like out of the corner of my eye, I saw something, and I'm like, I realized, where am I? Where am I? And then I was like, I'm in this hotel. I'm in Arizona or wherever, right? And I was like, holy shit. Like, that wasn't a real noise. Where did that come from? And nothing was there. What am I hallucinating now?
Right.
And I realized I was just falling asleep. Maybe I was just starting to dream. You know, maybe that's what was going on.
Is this the first time this has happened to you?
Yes, it is the first time that's happened to me. And so now I listen to these women describing it, and I'm like, am I the only male that has exploding head syndrome, which should be called phantom noise syndrome?
Right. You've had one incident, and now you're ready to
diagnose
the name.
Well, aren't you?
I'm changing the FBI.
You meet
BAU.
People and say they're sociopaths and psychopaths, and you have like one lesson in that. Come on. Anyway,
book. I read one book.
Read one book. Oh, a whole book. That's pretty good.
I'll give you the book because I highlighted stuff.
Oh, really?
I turned down pages. I take this stuff seriously. I take this podcast very seriously.
I know,
and as you can see, I have, I don't mean to brag, the biggest exploding head listenership of any podcast in the world. Podcast that has millions, 100 million downloads is...
But we don't have as many exploding head victims.
Greece. I know Greece is a country that you're the number one podcast in, which I call them a loser country for that reason.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
But go ahead.
Can I tell you?
Yes.
You also mentioned the nerdy kid who walked around, you know, grade school with a box of Kleenex.
Right.
Right. And always sniffling.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? That actually saved my ass in the biggest way when I took the New York State bar exam. I was that nerdy kid. And, you know, what I eventually realized what I was doing was literally bringing a box of Kleenex every time I took one of the Regents exams.
So let me guess.
One of the finals
you
exams.
You wrote answers on each Kleenex. And then
I didn't
blow
do that.
Your nose. You cheated. Jim Clemente is admitting right now he cheated on the bar exam. He wrote the answers to the questions on each tissue.
What,
and you pulled it out.
What happened was I realized that when I took those exams and I'm writing with the number two pencil, that the dust from the pencil and the eraser, that I was allergic to it. So literally, right before I took the bar exam, somebody told me, I said, I hate taking the bar exam because you have to write with pencil. And they said, why wouldn't you write with pencil? And I said, because I sneeze and I cough whenever I'm writing with pencil. And they said, well, go to your allergist. If you are allergic to it, they'll let you write it in pen. And I said, really? I did it. I went to the allergist. What he did, he took a pencil and he literally wrote on my arm with a pencil and then rubbed on my arm with a eraser and immediately it just turned red. And he said, you're allergic to pencils and erasers. So he wrote me a letter, the bar exam, let me take the bar in pen. And I didn't sneeze at all during the whole time. But they let me take it at a special room. They had a room, a little room. You know, normally in New York City, you take the bar on this pier. 5,000 people.
Come on, really?
On this pier, it's a warehouse.
Yeah. Your hand keeps going into my camera.
I'm sorry. I'm Italian. I have to talk my head. 5,000 people take this on the pier in New York in a warehouse. But 13 of us took it in this
little conference group.
There was one person who was blind, had to have it read to her.
Wow.
Another person who was taking it for like the 12th time.
Yeah.
And she had anxiety or something. Everybody had an issue. But wait, so they rented a little conference room at the Roosevelt Hotel, and that's where I took the bar exam. And as I'm taking the bar, I'm writing in pen, and I'm like, for the first time, I can breathe. I was so relaxed. I fell asleep during it.
Yeah.
But anyway, Then after I take the bar, you know, it's a really hard test. And a lot of people, like Kennedy, took 5 times before he passed the bar. So Robert Kennedy Jr. So I get in a car and I drive to L.A. You know, I drive across country after I take the bar. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, trying to relax, trying not to think about it.
Any road rage incidents?
And I, not back then. It was in the old days, right? And it was 1985, right? I call my girlfriend, you know, from a payphone at some point. And she said, are you sitting down? I said, no, I'm in a payphone, not a booth, you know?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? She goes, something happened. I said, what? What's wrong? She said, the bar exam. And I said, what? Somebody stole 50 of the actual tests because I think they think that they stole them because they thought that they'll pass everybody. But instead, they're making everybody
no way
retake the bar. And I said, what? Oh, my God, no. And you know what? I drove back to New York like in a panic. Like, oh, my God, I have to retake. This was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. The 13 people who were in that hotel room who had were personally monitored for taking the exam, we were the only ones out of 5,000 who didn't have to take the bar
exam.
Great. So being Mr. Sniffles saved me.
There you
Can
go.
You believe it?
Yeah.
I was so happy.
Yeah.
So when I heard that in your podcast, I was like, oh, I got to tell him this.
You're the sniffle kid.
I was the sniffle kid.
Did you hear last week that there's a price difference between the horizontal box of tissues and the vertical one?
Because it takes more folding.
It takes it's technically a difficult, more difficult task for the machines
it's
to do.
It's also more convenient, so they're going to charge you more.
Yeah,
that's
but these are the interesting things that come up when you Google, when you see the. So has your stupid sniffles saved you any other time?
Because no, that was it.
Because when you came up here, I said, "Do you want a tissue?" Because you had gum. And then do you want an extra one for your stupid
sniffles?
You did
say that, but stupid. Yeah, you're judging me.
Yeah, well, you really should still judged. Be picked on as an adult. We need adult bullying.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
FBI, okay?
Yeah. No,
you know, three I'm favorite still, words. I know. Well, I'm just saying my three favorite letters.
I won't say what happened, but I was with you, and you should have pulled out your badge. And I was so excited. I was sitting in the car with you going, oh, this is great. I'm now going to see somebody get out of something by saying that they're in the FBI. And you didn't even do it.
No, I didn't.
And I'm hinting. I'm going.
You were. He was. If you want to know the truth, he was doing a lot more than hinting. Okay. All right. He was being blatant about it. And it's very embarrassing.
I didn't
for
know.
Normal people.
I didn't know I was breaking the law doing that. So here's another thing that you texted me after listening to my podcast. You said, this is a question that was born out of listening to my podcast. Jim Clemente just drove through Arizona, the number one state in America for road rage. You made it to New Mexico safely.
Number two. Of road rage.
I'm sure your electric car is more welcome to New Mexico.
Probably.
Yeah. But this was born out of listening to episode after episode on the road. Why we feel so helpless when something goes wrong on an airplane.
Yeah. So we are... You know, as adults, we've grown up, we've taken control of our lives, we drive everywhere, we're in control, we have our houses.
Right.
On an airplane is the one place where we abdicate all of our control to the pilot and the stewardesses, the people who work there.
What about like a bus?
We still know how to drive a bus.
Oh.
If something happens to the driver.
Right. Good point.
We know how to stop it. We know there's a brake and you push on it and the thing will stop.
Mm.
We know there's a steering wheel that'll keep you on the road or out of that ravine, right? But a plane is incredibly complex. All these buttons and switches and all this stuff and all this language that they use to talk to the tower and all that stuff. It's completely foreign to us, but we give that up to them.
Huh.
So when we have an incident, we know that we can do nothing to help ourselves.
But isn't
that... So we panic to the max.
Why can't that be peaceful?
Well, why? Because we don't know that pilot. And even though he says, okay, ladies and gentlemen, we just had a little bump here. Everything's going to be all right. You don't believe that shit because you had a real bump or you didn't hear the damn thing go down or you're about to land and then you have to take off again. Something's wrong.
Were you listening to the episode where it's a close call?
Yes,
we almost hit another plane.
That's why I wanted to talk to you about it.
Sarasota.
That's a major disaster.
It was a major. It's been written about.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if the plane turned on and you were 150 feet, that's less than a second from landing.
We were 1,000 feet.
You're going
1,000 feet, I think it was, wasn't it?
You said 150 feet.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, yeah,
it was close. It was close. It was a lot close. You knew there was a problem.
Yeah.
And it was scary. And I had a premonition right before that. And I'm I've never said this before, but, and I didn't even tell my parents. My parents were in Sarasota, Florida. I was doing shows at McCurdy's Comedy Club. Which you loved. You listened to the episode with Les McCurdy. Mm-hmm. I interviewed him.
I think he's a great guy, too.
Yeah, in an earlier episode. And I was landing, and I thought, what if there was an accident and my parents had to come to the airport and claim me identify my body? And sure enough,
be easy. You have second such later, crazy hair and big eyes. They'd be like, yeah, this has got to be him.
I got to tell you something I realized the other day. I have big hair energy.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I realized. Yeah, big hair energy.
That's good.
So I had this weird premonition. Wow. And then, of course, there was that incident on Sarasota. And it was super scary. Can I tell you what the worst part of that incident was? Was the lack of information.
That's right.
You just want to know what is really
happening. Why do you want to know? Because you want to try to regain some of the control you gave up to those people that are flying the plane. You realize that you have unnecessarily given them control of your life, 100%.
Yeah.
And that is something that we are afraid of as responsible adults. If we were, you know, kids who didn't have control of our lives, we wouldn't panic as much as adults who know, holy shit, I gave this motherfucker my life in his hands.
But why can't I, what I try and do, I train myself, anytime there's turbulence or I think there's a problem, I think this will be over in a minute, meaning none of this will matter. If you're dead, none of this will matter. And I think about that too, like when people are tortured and die, I think they're dead and none of that mattered. It's
I have a different take on that. I don't know if you want to hear it because it might ruin the rest of your existence, but once I was in Bermuda with my best friend who's a pilot and an Air Force pilot, and he has amazing lung capacity, and he could go underwater and stay underwater for like 4 minutes.
Okay.
And so we're swimming and I'm kind of following him and I'm a little bit above him, and it's crystal clear water. Crystal clear. And all of a sudden I got fear of heights. Because I felt like I was going to fall down the 40 feet that he was below me, right? And I have fear of heights, and I had an experience that even though I'm floating, like I felt like, oh my God, I'm going to fall. So I start to go up, and I realized we had gone under a coral reef. So when I went up, I expected to get air. Instead, I got bloody fingers from cutting my fingers on the coral reef, and I had to claw my way to the air. And I thought, oh my God, what if I die under here? Like, what if I'm in a cave and I can't get any more air and I'm going to pass out? And I thought for a fraction of a second, what if the moment of death is what you experience for the rest of eternity? That would be a bad thing.
No, of course it would. But that's not the rules.
I hope it's not the rules.
No, it's not the
rules. But for that second, that millisecond, it was the rules in my head.
Sounds like you had a major panic attack.
I did. And I clawed my way out of there, and I swam to the beach, and I never went into the water again.
What?
For like 7 years.
Oh.
7 years.
Well, it sounds like you waterboarded yourself.
Well, I did something. I panic attacked myself.
You don't believe
in... But I was trapped. I was trapped in between two major phobias, right? I had never experienced claustrophobia before, but I definitely had fear of heights before. So I got those two and drowning. So three major phobias at the same time.
Yeah.
And that threw me into a little bit of a panic attack.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Can't FBI badge your way out of that
No. Were you in the FBI? Was this an adult incident?
Yeah. Well, it was, it actually was probably pre-FBI. It was probably when I graduated from college, something like that.
You don't believe in torture. Because I was thinking...
I believe it exists, but I believe that it's the wrong thing to do.
Because it feels like you waterboarded yourself. And I had some questions about that because waterboarding gives you the sensation that you're drowning rather fast.
Yes. And the reason is, so what they do is they keep your head lower than your upper body.
Okay.
Okay. They keep your head lower than your lower body.
Yeah.
So your lower body is above your head. And what that does is as you breathe, it traps carbon dioxide in your lungs, all right? Normally, when you're upright, the carbon dioxide will come out naturally. But if you're inverted like that, the carbon dioxide builds up in your lungs, and it forces you, your brain forces you to breathe in, even though you're trying not to breathe in because there's little droplets of water coming in through the towel that they put over your face when they're pouring the water on your face when you're waterboarding. So you're having little droplets of water forcefully breathed into your lungs. Mm. And that's why you choke and your brain says you are drowning. So you panic. That's the whole purpose of waterboarding, to make you feel like you are dying and you can't stop yourself from breathing in. That's why it's torture. And that's why it's illegal in the United States of America. But
does it go on?
Well, it doesn't anymore.
Did
I
it?
Think, it did.
You don't
absolutely.
Think our military... or
well, they I know info. They changed the military manual as a result of the memo that I wrote, me and my colleague wrote, telling the world and the Pentagon, the White House, the Department of Justice that they were doing this and that it was illegal. And eventually there was congressional hearings on it and all that, and they changed the rules.
Yeah, you went down to what?
I just sort of clicked.
No. Well, all the cameras are working. You went down to Gitmo and you interviewed some of these terrorists.
Detainees,
But you still saw human beings.
Of course I did. They are human beings, and it's the way we get them to actually cooperate with us rather than... It's the way we actually get them to cooperate with us rather than making them even more firm enemies. Hmm. And so I taught the military people down there how to do rapport-based interrogations and treat people with dignity and respect and actually get them to give you honest answers instead of being so afraid and so harmed that they lie and tell you whatever they think you want to hear.
Yeah.
Which is, you want accurate and reliable information. You don't want just somebody to give you what they think will stop the pain.
Right. And it worked.
Of course it worked.
But how do you know?
We've been doing that with serial killers for forever.
But how do you know if they're lying or telling you the truth?
Well, some of the things that there are indications of people lying, but what I'm saying is, we get them to cooperate, and then we can corroborate what they say to us instead of just using the information, willy-nilly without actually corroborating it, which we all know examples of that, where people went after things like weapons of mass destruction that weren't there because they listened to people maybe who were being tortured.
Yeah.
Well,
let's end on a lighter note.
Okay, let's end on a lighter note. Something lighter than torture.
Yeah, what's one of the... Do you have more on your list? Go ahead.
Can I just...
Jim Clemente is my guest today. Jim is a former FBI profiler. He has a podcast. I can't remember the name. Profile True Whatever.
Real Crime Profile. It's not too difficult.
Over 100 million downloads.
Yeah, so the difference between us and true crime is that it's actually real. Laura Richards and I, she worked for Scotland Yard. I worked for the FBI.
This is your co-host. Yeah.
This is my co-host. And then Lisa Zambetti is sort of our every person. She was the casting director for Criminal Minds, and she asks great questions and interacts with all our listeners so we can feed those questions into the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's been, it's great. We've been doing this for over 7 years. We have over 400 episodes, and we're doing great because we're helping people. People write to us all the time saying they got out of a bad relationship, or they recognized that their kid was going down the wrong path, or that, they realized that the person they were with was actually a really bad person. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten out of bad situations, and we've helped people get the word out. We've also interacted with law enforcement and gotten them more information so they could help solve cases, things like that. So I'm really happy to do that. But true crime sometimes wanders into non-professional people giving professional advice to people,
and
which is not a good
right.
thing.
Right. There's a couple of things I don't like. One is I just listened to, I won't say which one it is, but I just listened to like a 10-episode or 8-episode audio podcast about one crime, and it followed it, and I found it very irresponsible, right. Sort of misleading us on purpose, meaning
right.
like making us think one thing for dramatic purposes. And it
making
was
making somebody look guilty,
guilty
when
that wasn't guilty.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, that I don't think that's right. And I also don't think it's right for people to glorify the offenders. If at all possible, we don't even name the offenders, because naming them gives them that little bit of publicity that they're looking for, their attention. And so we avoid that. And we also we are victim-centric. We talk about the victims and their families, and we try to explain the behavior that some people can't understand.
Do you think law enforcement hates these crime sleuths? I mean, they are solving some crimes.
Some cases they solve, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the law enforcement.
Just, I got to be honest with you. 500,000
people.
We have become a world where it is self-service. You check yourself out. You solve your crime. You do everything.
They have like McDonald's now that has no humans in it.
I know.
How do you know?
You got to tip the computer.
Yeah, but what if they accidentally, if the thing accidentally flipped over let's say a mouse got onto the patty.
Who cares?
Nobody would even know.
Who
and it
cares?
Would just go through the whole thing.
Don't you understand? You get food to go now. The order's always wrong.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. We live in a world post-COVID. Nobody cares. You're on your own. Don't complain. We don't give a shit. We've complained so much that they're now, if you call customer service, you're not even allowed to talk to a person.
No,
we've irritated all the people. They make us talk to this bot or virtual reality assistant
AI,
person.
Right.
Yeah, and they're like, they're not even close. They try and give you articles. They're like, I'm like, having trouble connecting to Wi-Fi. And then it's like, let me see if I get this right. You're having trouble with your wife? You're like, no. They're like, let me send you some articles on couples therapy.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know. I have to say, although I'm better with road rage, I am not better with customer service rage. I mean, when you're on the phone for 2 hours and 45 minutes and somebody says, hello, and you just get out half a word and they push the button and it hangs up.
Oh, God.
After you just wasted 2 hours and 45
minutes
of your
life. Well, they should all have the callback.
And if it happened week after week after week, during the pandemic, there was all sorts of issues, making sure your bills were paid, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And you get on the phone with these people and they give you advice. They tell you to do this. And then you get a letter saying, why didn't you do that?
Well, they're looking for a reason.
I was told to do this.
They're looking for a reason to disqualify you.
Yeah, it was maddening. And so for weeks and weeks and weeks, I had to make all these calls and juggle all these things. And, I feel bad because my niece was over one time when I'm talking to the 47th guy who is now just explaining. I said,
what is this for?
It was for a banking situation. And I'm talking to this guy and he's saying, all right, did you do this? Did you do this? And I said, wait, have you not read the file?
No.
Do you know that there's 57 conversations that we've had?
Dude,
he's
at home playing a video game while he's taking your call.
Well, my niece got very offended how rude I was to this guy. I said, I am not going through this one more time. I've done this 47 times. Yeah. I'm not doing it again. And she was like, he's just a clerk. He just works there. Calm down. And I'm like, yeah, but he's the company. He's the only person I get to talk to at this company. If the CEO was on this line, he'd be getting exactly the same thing. It has nothing to do with his position. It has to do with what his company is doing to me. So I try to calm down and be a little better, but it gets to me when you're talking about something important that has a time limit, that you have done everything methodically that they have asked you to do, and they're starting again at ground zero.
Sounds stressful.
It's quite stressful.
Especially when there's money involved. Listen, I don't mean to
I couldn't get access to my bank account.
Yeah, I mean that's horrible. And I don't mean to compete with you, but I ordered 4 items from World Market online.
Were they napkin dispensers?
That's none of your business, Jim. Okay? But I ordered 4.
4 items. Did they come in 4 separate boxes?
They're 4 jars. It's a stuff called, I don't want to say because now everybody will order it, but it's a honey product.
Okay,
I ordered four of them.
Okay,
and then they informed me via email that they don't have them in the warehouse.
Oh,
and that
they ran out.
They ran out, but they still charged me. And there was a whole. It's a long story.
Wow.
The long story short is World Market has the same hold music as Delta, so I was having PTSD, if that's the right expression. I don't know what you guys call it at the BAU, Behavioral Auditing
Association. They're dropping the D.
The FBI.
They're dropping the D from it, just so you know, just to be sensitive.
Of what, Delta Airlines?
No, PTS.
Oh.
Post-traumatic stress. It's not a disorder anymore.
Oh, good.
Yeah? It's just post-traumatic stress.
For a second,
stress.
I thought I had a disorder. I don't.
No,
I'm quite normal.
Orny, you're far from
normal. What's the strangest observation you had about me listening to my podcast on your travels?
Well, it's hard to quantify. I mean, I only have like...
This is your job, Jim.
Yeah, I know.
You're a profiler.
Yes, I am. No, the strangest or the coolest?
Coolest.
Or
whatever.
No, I mean, All right, I'll give you two, all right? One is, you're pretty relentless when you're dealing with somebody, when you think they're not being completely upfront.
Mm.
You're very relentless. So you'd be a good interrogator.
Was this one of my guests?
It was one of your guests. But on the other side, you love interrupting yourself when you're interrupting a person and your podcast.
What?
Is that my car?
No. What? Your car's on that side. What?
Right over there.
No, your car's fine. Let them break in. I have cameras. That's what we have insurance for.
I don't want somebody to drive my car away.
Wait, so I'm interrupting people?
No, you're interrupting people on your podcast. And then you're playing the audio from that interruption, and you're interrupting it on your podcast. So you're interrupting yourself, interrupting a person.
Well, this is because I had excerpts that I was playing. Right,
I know, but you're interrupting yourself. Like you're narrating your narration of somebody else. So they're there, and you're interviewing them, and you're telling them what you're observing about them, because you're very observant, and you like that's what you're the basis of your comedy. And then... you interrupt yourself narrating that person.
Yeah, I know which interview you're talking about. There was a very tricky balance.
Situation.
Yeah, that wasn't normal.
All right.
Would you say I interrupted myself interrupting you today?
Oh.
What's the strangest case you ever worked on or funniest in the FBI?
Come on. There weren't funny cases. I mean... it's all crime
so
all the time.
So why would you do this? You're already messed up in the head in general.
How do you think I got
know your,
that way?
Your childhood, you've exposed yourself. Is it?
What do you mean I've exposed? You sound
you
like
stop
I'm
checking your car. It's right outside.
Okay, I know, but I can't see it. But what do you mean I've exposed myself? You're saying like I'm some creepy guy.
No. You didn't expose yourself. I'm saying you exposed yourself to this lifestyle.
Yeah.
How different are you because of all the things you saw?
You know
saw
when
in the
people
FBI?
Say to people in the service, or even a cop sometimes, thank you for your service?
Yeah.
Well, it's because you get exposed to the worst things humans do to one another.
Right.
It's kind of builds up over time. So it's hard, and you have to find a way to find balance. And that, if we're going to end on something positive, this is what
I'd like to end on something light and fun.
We have to take care of ourselves. And the people around us. And the only way to do it, especially if you're in a profession that deals with so much negativity and violence, you have to find something refreshing to do every week, if not every day. Something to do every day if you can, but nobody has that kind of time. But if you can do it once a week to sort of decompress, it's actually going to make you a healthier person and you're going to be better at what you do.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to help more people.
And that's why you like laughing.
I do.
So you want to spend the second half of
every
your life just
week.
Laughing.
I have to see you do some kind of comic.
Well, you're coming this Thursday.
I am. I will see you. So twice in 1 week.
Comedy and Magic Club. What happened was I was supposed to have this show at the Comedy and Magic Club a couple of weeks ago.
And I was driving there and
we
you
all
called
were.
Me. Yeah, you were driving. I was driving and you called me. It's a
brother
Jim.
Was driving.
Yeah, I was like, Jim. You were like, Jim, I got bad news. And I'm like, what? And you said they canceled the show. And I said, what? What do you mean they canceled the show? Did you not show up? And you said, no, I'm on my way. And they said the water heater busted.
What, yeah, the water heater.
Bad excuse.
So there's no hot water.
Truck in some bottle of water from next door.
Still do the show. Yeah. Boil it. Boil it.
Boil it. You got a stove.
But that's what I'm saying. The Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, they're playing by the rules to the letter, to the letter. And nobody else is. That's why in the last episode, I opened up talking about crime. Why do people like me continue to play by the rules? Why don't I just walk out of BevMo with my bottle when everybody else is doing it? Why?
Integrity.
Integrity.
You're a good person.
Well, why do I feel like I'm stupid?
Well, don't worry about it. You're not stupid. The people that are not enforcing those laws and the people that are advertising the fact that they're not enforcing those laws, they're the ones that are stupid.
So what's next for Jim Clemente then?
Oh, I got stuff in the hopper. We just turned in Bluebeard, my dramatic series.
On Audible, right?
On Audible, yeah. It's not coming out
until
later
in
the year.
That. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Glad I had a part.
Yeah, well, you know, I...
Was that before you met me? Or?
Yes, it was before I met you.
Well, can we go back and re-record? Who's in that? Ralph Fiennes?
No, his brother, Joseph Fiennes.
Fiennes.
I think it's Fiennes.
Do you think he did a good job, or do you think maybe I should step in and re-record all of his stuff?
There is one guy who played a taxi driver that we could probably use you for.
Really?
Yeah, it's already done. Not that one, but the next one, definitely. I'm writing another one now, and you could definitely be in it.
I spoke to a voiceover agent yesterday.
Well, you should, because you got to.
You have to talk to my agent. I now have people.
Yeah, you have radio people.
Yeah,
I cannot wait. You know what? This would be my
call
dream in
this
life.
Sunday.
This would be my dream in life. I'm going to admit it to all your fans and followers. If you get, let's just say you get a gig, mm-hmm. you have your own radio show. I want to be your sidekick. I want to be your wingman. Like, what's her name? That's Howard Stern's Robin. Yeah. I want to be the person who like is in the mic saying, yeah, you're right. You're crazy. No,
you don't have what it takes to just be the co-host, because you'll interrupt too much. You'll interrupt me, interrupting myself.
I know, but doesn't that feed on itself?
I guess, but Jim, we're working on something.
I know, but
we're working on something.
What I'm trying to say is that might be it. That might be where it happens.
What, me and you on KFI AM radio?
Wherever.
They're going to want me to do a weekly show.
I know.
Yeah, so you're going to
sit
just, there.
I would be happy just because you would make me laugh. That would be my pay. Well, hopefully I get paid something, but that would be my
pay. Scale.
But scale. I'd get paid scale, 15 cents an hour. Yeah. I know. But it would be just great to be able to, like, when you say, I wonder what Jim would say about this. Or you could turn to me and say, Jim, what's the deal with that? And I'd say really fast and then shut up. And all I'm there for is to, like, tee up the ball so you could just.
I love it.
Hit him out.
I love that. I'll have you in one time. I won't even mention you. You can just sit there. I'll do the podcast and you can do your.
I'll fill in little by little.
I'd love that.
I'll fill in. No, but I'll fill in if you have. You can write me a note and I'll write it back to you.
I think it's great. I'll tell you the one thing I love about this KFI is I have a producer and she, her name's Sharon. She gets me articles. She lays out the entire show, gets me guests. It's like there's a full team around me. I don't have to turn the cameras on. Yeah. It's heaven. I want to thank Jim Clemente.
I want to thank Orny Adams.
Because I know you've got some crap going on at your house right now you got to deal with. But I'm going to try and talk you into going to the diner with me. But episode 83, let's play some music. Hold on. I'm going to play some music. You don't need the headsets. It's just a theme song.
Throw me back to my road trip.
It's just a theme song. There you go, Jim. You want to sing it? Jim, sing it.
If I can. Just another
rainy day. It's just another rainy day in Florida. Okay, hold on. Sitting with my little. You got it. All right, ready? That's the rain.
All right, that's rain.
Just another rainy day in Florida.
Florida.
Sitting with our funny little friend. He's got crazy hair.
He's got really big eyes.
Come on, Jim. What's his name?
What's his name, Kev?
Orny.
Adams. Put them together, and what do you got? Orny Adams.
There you go. That's a former FBI profiler, Jim Clemente. Having fun. Letting loose. Episode 83, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? You can email me at whatswrong@ornyadams.com. And you can go to teamwhatswrong.com for everything. This is on Spotify. This is, it's everywhere, right? iTunes. You can get watch the video in a couple of months. Or if you want to watch the video next week, you got a Patreon, patreon.com/OrnyAdams. My tour schedule's at OrnyAdams.com. Have I said enough, Jim? Have I thanked Ernesto Hurtado for mastering? It's still going. Jim, you have the last word. Say it.
Goodbye, and thank you for having me, Orny. Always laugh when I'm with you.
And I'd like to thank Jim, my new spokesman, for exploding head syndrome.
There you go.
You're amazing. Thanks.